The following is an encore presentation of Swing Thoughts. We'll explain. Welcome, everybody. It's Swing Thoughts, episode...
You get a shiver in the dark.
268. But in actual fact, this is the second time we've done this, so is it 269? Or, anyway, here's what we'll explain. I'm a golf spiritual leader, as you know, along with Coach Tim O'Connor. And Tim, it just seemed like, you know, 2 days ago when we were recording our podcast, and maybe you can explain what happened at the end. You got a phone call from me, or we were talking, and what happened?
Well, we recorded our show, and GSL was doing his professional thing at the end, just making sure we've got it all recorded. And he goes, wait a sec, how come there's these gaps here? And that's when he discovered that the magical recording equipment didn't magically record my voice. It's only his. And I'll let you take it from there.
Well, I know you, some of the STDs might think, oh, that makes sense. He's got such a big ego. He thought, oh, he only needed to record his voice. You know, I've done a couple thousand episodes recording the program with Fred. And you and I have recorded now.
A couple thousand?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, like it's north of a couple thousand. And in all that time, well, you know, in another month, Fred and I will celebrate 13 years of doing a podcast. And when we started, we were doing it 5 days a week for many, many years. So, you know, I love when people say, do the math. No, you do the math, lazy bastard. Anyway, the math would tell you it's a lot of episodes. And yes, you and I have been recording for 9 years. And our last episode was Swing Thoughts, number 267. In all those recording sessions, only twice have I screwed up the recording. Once with Freddie and I, we were interviewing this band from Hamilton. I can't remember the name. It was a big deal. It was in our other studio when we were doing it in studio. And it was a great episode, a couple hours, and I didn't hit record and we had no backup. Which was the last time we had no backup. And then with you and I the other day, I hit record, everything was fine, but what I usually do at the start of the show is I mute both of our microphones so that the music can play clean for a couple seconds, and then I turn our microphone, I usually turn everybody's microphone on. And the weird thing is I had your mic up, but the channel that records it, is this already too boring for people? Anyway, this is what happened. We recorded this great episode. In fact, the best episode we've ever done.
And so we're trying to recapture the magic. Is this like you're on the patio after your round and you go like, you wouldn't believe what happened to me on the third tee. Just listen to, hear me out.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And you know, and it kind of made me feel a little bit like the tournament a few years ago when I played the wrong ball at the end of the round. Everything was going great. About to have my best finish in a GAO event and played the wrong ball and did not finish as expected. Anyway, well, here we are. And as far as recreating the episode, you know, there was a couple main themes from the now lost episode. We'll call it the lost episode of Swing Thoughts. There's a couple themes that we'll get to. One of the main ones was an article that Tim had written recently, and we're going to discuss that, and that'll be easy to recreate. But some of the other nonsense around it is lost. And frankly, you know what? We're the poorer for it because some of it was just insane. But all of that having said, welcome everybody to Swing Thoughts. We appreciate you being here. We're recording it now on Friday, August 23rd, the last couple of weeks of our summer season. After that, after Labor Day, we'll go into every couple of weeks. But as always, we're grateful and appreciative of TaylorMade sponsoring us. And we talked a little bit about this the other day, about, yes, you've heard about the driver, the irons, the balls, but more about custom fitting.
Get fit with TaylorMade Golf's ultimate custom club fitting experience. The TaylorMade Performance Lab in Woodbridge unites golfers with a personalized fitting session and TaylorMade equipment to optimize your game. Highly trained master fitters take an in-depth look at the golf swing utilizing industry-leading technology. Book your fitting experience now to cover all your custom needs from driver to putter. Free gift with booking. Get fit. Optimize your game at the TaylorMade Performance Lab. Visit TaylorMadeFitting.ca.
And also, speaking of fitting, how cozy do these Oscar Bravo polos fit? Did you see what I did there?
Yeah.
It's a fitting.
Is that called a segue?
See, I didn't there do that. Go. I didn't do that on the last episode.
Yeah. Well, they are amazingly well-fitting polos. They just feel so good against your skin. I don't know what kind of miracle fabric these guys have made these Oscar Bravo polos out of, but they are... they feel good, and you look great. And they have little features that are just really nice. Like the collars, some are polka dots or paisley or herringbone. I think that's what it's called. Anyways, they just look amazing, distinctive. And those little features are carried through. The placket is as humble as GSL likes me to say, and these different features. So check out whoisoscarbravo.com.
You can call me Humble if you want. You can call me GSL. You can call me Howard.
Just don't call me late for dinner.
That's right. You can call me the How Man. How Man. Also, thanks to SecretLinks.golf. Go check it out. Maybe go to Mexico this fall and play golf in the Riviera Maya. The Joyful Golfer. How Mason Cassis redefines the game. I mean, right off, this is the latest in the linksnews.ca. Tim O'Connor has written another unbelievable article. Oh, and I should, before I forget, I'm going to write it down. The Carl episode featuring GSL is out, so I'm going to remind everyone.
Oh, cool.
I'll remind everyone at the end of the show. Okay, so how did I, what made me think of that? Because you did an article on me, and then I was like, oh, yeah, and Carl and I spoke recently on the Mind Caddy. Tell us a little bit about who Mason Cassis is and why does he play golf differently than most of us.
Well, Mason, he's a 63-year-old guy. He's a very successful business person. He plays golf every day. He's very fortunate in that regard. But I think that he plays golf differently than most of the golf nerds that I've ever met, in that he really has his priorities, I think, really straight, and that is to have fun. Mason is a very good player, but he's always just having fun. He's always trying shots just to see if he can pull them off. For example, he will usually use a driver on a par three, regardless of the length, and he'll use it for the entire hole. You know, if he misses the greens, he'll chip on and putt. And he thinks, actually, in many ways, he often putts better with his driver. He'll hit driver off the deck, and maybe even if he has just a regular, you know, chip shot, you would hit like maybe a pitching wedge or a 9-9 running up. No, he'll try and flop that sucker as high as he can to see how old. And even if he's playing well, he'll try these shots. And, you know, he'll always go for it. It doesn't matter if he's got the Grand Canyon between him and the green. He'll take that 3-wood and give it a bash. So he really does play the game in a different way, and the emphasis is on fun. And one of the things I found that was interesting in talking to him is we were talking about golf for about 45 minutes, and he hadn't mentioned anything about the quality of his game. And I don't usually like asking people, so what do you shoot? You know, what's your index? And I said, well, you know, kind of what's your average score? He goes, 76.
Yeah, like he's so quite obvious. Like he can really play.
The guy's a player, but I think it's so much of what comes into play that makes him a, quote, good player is his attitude. It's about having fun, just trying all kinds of different things. I mean, he doesn't carry a scorecard with him. He doesn't post his scores. He doesn't play in the Club C or any club events. He just plays kind of for the hell of it.
And there's so much more in the article. I want you to read it. It's called, it's at thelinksnews.ca. And Tim has posted that. And you mentioned just before we started recording that it will also be on your Substack this weekend.
That's right, yeah.
And so the reason I want people to read it is there's so much to this article. It's so well written, as always, to be expected.
Thank you.
But it really does describe a kind of a golfer that seems almost alien to most yes. golfers. As I mentioned in the last episode, but I see it here again, one of my favorite lines is, interestingly, most golfers rarely say they play the game. They play golf to have fun. And I would say that, having thought about it now for a couple of days, golfers say that they play for fun, but they actually don't really play it for fun.
Yeah, I'll grant you that. Yeah.
That, you know, everyone says that on the first tee, you know, hey, let's have fun, you know, enjoy the day. And then as soon as somebody, hit their first squirrely shot, it's like, well, all the fun is gone now. But this golfer you describe that tries shots and goes for greens and deeper in the article, like even when he's having a pretty good round by anybody's standards, he still will try the stuff because. And I'll throw it back to you, and I want to know more about this man. Is it because he, in his mind, has changed the paradigm of the game, at least for himself?
Oh, I think so. I mean, there's no getting around it. Like I said, he doesn't carry a scorecard, but he knows where he is in relation to par. I mean, when you're a good player, you always know, oh, I'm two over, I'm even, whatever. But at the end of the day, it's still mainly about the experience, and especially the experience he has with the people he's playing with. I mean, he's always recording videos of them, sometimes of himself. And it always just seems to be the interaction and how much fun can we have, and let's watch this ball in the air and ooh and ah, or, you know, just respond. It's about that. It's about the experience.
Yeah.
I think that's the richness for him.
Well, and as you describe in the article, it's not like Mazin is just like this on the golf course. His whole spirit is of that. He's a, you know, self-made man. He's, you know, he's built up businesses, but he's always arriving at the golf course with treats for people, and he's always taking shots and posting things to his Instagram. I mean, he's living an examined life is what he is doing. He's sucking the marrow out of all the aspects of not just golf, but all the aspects of his life. So it's no surprise that he brings a different slant to this game, and maybe a good lesson for all of us in, you know, upping the joy, upping the playfulness. So that's another Kent Osborne thing that I love, is that how playful can you be in a round of golf?
Well, one of the things that's interesting too is that he reads about 2 to 3 nonfiction books a week.
Wow.
And he reads books like the philosophy books, political books, biographies. He posts sometimes the books he's reading, like one by Thich Nhat Hanh, the Dalai Lama. He read that book Sapiens. I mean, this guy, he's a worldly guy.
Right. No surprise that he approaches life and golf the way he does.
Yeah, that's exactly my point. I mean, he just, I think his, and also he has a very interesting background in that, so it's kind of a cool story. So he was born in Lebanon. His mother had 10 children, and they're just in this little village in Lebanon, and they decided they were going to emigrate. So his father and two of his older brothers came over, and they just worked their butts off, sent money back, and his mother and 7 of his siblings, who were all under the age of 12,
wow,
came here, and they had nothing. And just sort of make the point of that these were, they didn't have hardly anything. The very first picture ever taken of the family was by Canadian customs officers.
Mm.
The first photograph ever taken of the family. And so what Mazin knows is that, and he posted a really interesting piece. Remember when Trump was talking about all these damn immigrants and the shitholes that they come from and everything?
Yeah, the shithole countries, yeah.
Yeah, and so he posted something, you know, about that, and he said that am I an immigrant? And the point he was making was, I wouldn't have the courage of my parents to be an immigrant.
No, I love that. I think, yeah.
So from that, you know, cliched, humble background, I just think he went, you know what? Like, I've just lived this amazing life. From the example of my parents, what they modeled and mentored for me. He's kind of been, I think he said, successful by chance. And he's just going to enjoy himself. But I think what he's doing is that he's spreading a lot of that joy. And actually, he's modeling, I think, to me, a great way to be in life. You know, be generous. He brings 5 days a week. He brings to the staff at Greyhawk, you know, baklava or bread that he makes, you know, ice cream on hot days, etc. And I just think he's modeling, hey, folks, let's enjoy this life we have. Let's not be stuck in angst and what we don't have and what we could be. Let's enjoy what we have. Like, I'll just close this by saying, in my conversation with him, a number of conversations, it's always about the doing.
Mm-hmm.
Never about the result. Always just doing.
Well, his son Jordan says, he doesn't do things the common way. He wants to have fun. And, you know, again, so this is who this man is. The article is at the Lynx News. And I love how it starts. This is from a coaster on the author's desk. The first line, a well-adjusted person is one who can play golf as if it were a game. And these are some of the things I think a lot of us, it gets lost on a lot of us, that we forget it. Like, we say it, but do you actually live it? And here's a guy, Mason Cassis, who's actually living it, but no, as I said a second ago, no small coincidence that that's how he lives his life. But I want to talk a little bit about being playful. I also want to stop saying
There are Toastmasters and learn about public speaking.
Yeah, I should take a public speaking course. I really need to clean it up. There are some people I play with. Now, most of the time, now, when I say for the last few years, I don't know how long, but for many years now, I've had a lot more fun playing golf, whether I play great or I don't. That's been established. That's why I'm GSL. There are certain people I play with that really bring out that in me because they are also kind of that way. You know, when I play with Kent or I play with my buddy Grant or I play with this. The people I played with Wednesday after we recorded the Lost Show, a couple of them are buddies of mine that I really do enjoy playing with. Like, we really, it's so ridiculous the shit we say to each other. One of them in particular is a buddy of mine named Mike Kazarian, also a son of immigrants, Armenians. And he's a really good player, like a 1-2 handicap, like a very, very good golfer. But when Mike and I play together, like, it's just ridiculous. At one point in the round, it was men's night, we were having a shadow puppet fight because of the way the sun was. One guy was getting ready to, and we were literally making shadow puppets on the green as like monsters fighting each other. This was in the middle of a round of golf.
That's great.
And it's the takeaway from your article, and it's reminded me that when I am my most playful, when I am sort of just having an experience other than how good am I playing, a little, you know, pro tip, you'll often play better, but the playing better or not becomes so less important than the being playful that made me reflect on is how much better I enjoy the game, mainly because of that, because I bring a different vibe to it, that I'm more open and playful. And so, yeah, you know, I have the odd terrible round like everyone else, but it doesn't stick to me like it once did.
Yeah, yeah. What I thought about was my own experience at Blue Springs. So number 9 at Blue Springs, par 5, double dogleg. You hit a pretty good drive. I can go for the green in 2, but there were so many times, you know, hitting over that water, even though I might even have like a 5 iron or something in my hand or a hybrid, a very doable shot. like everything from cold top it to hit it left, left water, into the water, because I was so tight you couldn't, you know, drive a nail up my butt with a hammer. As if this was
I'm sorry. There are times when you're loose enough to do that and open to the experience. I'm sorry. Please continue. What a weird.
I'm just trying to be fanciful. Well, way whatever. Of saying
so you were very uptight. You couldn't jam a nail up your butt with a hammer. Okay. Well, I'll keep that in mind.
Okay.
Yeah, we're all. But anyways, I relate to that. But
so unconsciously,
sure.
This is like. You know, this is a test. Am I going to do it? It's a big deal. But what if I had the approach that this was just fun? Let's hit the shot and see what happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if I cold top it, that's, you know, I could laugh at that.
You just said something very, very key, I think. And I want the STDs to, let's explore this. Because when, it, you know, this is kind of wrapped up in a Raymond Pryor thing, but when score matters, we often tighten up.
Mm-hmm.
Your exactly. weird hammer analogy aside, but we often tighten up because we see golf shots. You know, Carl has said this. We've talked about it. We see the course as a threatening area, but we mm-hmm. see golf shots as a test, and tests are pass fail scenarios.
100%.
And I played yesterday, so I've played a couple times since you and I recorded the lost episode. It'll be like one of those things that'll show up in a bootleg one day, years after we're, you know, dead. Someone will do something with your audio so they think could restore it anyway. So
it'll
I played
like
golf
in secret.
Exactly, it'll show up in the black market. So I played golf yesterday at Big Wind Island. And only second time I've ever done it. For you people who aren't from this province, it's a private golf course that's only accessible by water. And it's a beautiful golf course. It's very, not the hardest course I've ever played, but it's stunning. The scenery. And I was playing with an old friend of mine, Todd Shapiro, who people in the Toronto market know. He worked on the Humble and Fred show, then he worked on the Dean Blundell show, and then he was at his own show on Sirius. He's sort of a media guy. Great kid. I've known him for many, many years. So he invites me up to play at his course. And he's like a 20, 21 handicap. He's just gotten into golf for a few years and can hit a golf ball very nicely. But his club championship is this weekend. And as we were playing, we had a great time. I played with a couple really cool guys, including a former vice president of Nike worldwide. Like this guy, you know, worked out of Portland. Just a very interesting man. But Todd at one point said to me, yeah, I'm so glad you're here. I'm just, you know, we're having a great time. But I just want to, I said, so what are your goals for the club championship? He goes, I just want to test my nerves under pressure. And I went, thought about it for a bit. And I said, hey, by the way, that phrase you keep saying, I want to test my nerves. I said, the problem with that is you're setting yourself up to pass or fail. And I think a lot of people, this is where I'm getting to a point. A lot of people feel that about golf, especially competitive golf. You want to see if you can test yourself. And I said to Todd, maybe a better way to look at it is you want to make having fun your first priority. You're playing in the club championship to have fun because that's a contest you can win. And then and he responded to it perfectly. So I said, let's look at it this way. It's a chance for you to have fun in competition, meet some new people and see how you do. But as far as testing yourself, because I said, as soon as you hit the first bad shot, your brain's going to go, fail. Every bad shot is going to be a pass or fail scenario. And that's why in that scenario you described, because I've had that shot too. I rarely hit a very good second shot on that hole. Oftentimes, listeners have had a second shot into a par five. It's one of the funny things about golf. The longer you wait for the green to clear in a par five, the worse shot you're about to hit. So,
exactly.
What say you, young man?
Well, I thought you said it very well, particularly with your buddy there. So we come back to intention.
Yes.
You know, and the intention is to have fun, just soak in the experience. I often think of around a golf, well, every once in a while I think of this. It's kind of like a round of golf, particularly in a competition with people you maybe know little or you don't know at all. It's kind of like you hit your drives off the first tee, and then you put this raft into the river, and you get on, and you have all these adventures. And then you get off the raft on the 18th green, and you shake hands and stuff. And so an intention would be like to enjoy, soak in this experience and just really enjoy all that's there for you to take in. You know, being with your buddies, having, or, you know, the people you're playing with, you know, funny shots, great shots, and just having an intention for something. I mean, to me, it's the same thing as, you know, taking a kid fishing. If the intention is, I'm going to spend the time with this kid, and I'm going to fix the tangles. I'm going to, you know, put the worms on the hook. And it's all about the kid. You're going to have a great time. But if it's all like, oh, maybe I hope I can catch a big fish today, mm-hmm. then you're going to be distracted and all that. But so intention has so much to do with, I think, how we go into anything.
I agree. And, you know, Todd, who I think this was his first competition starting tomorrow, I didn't say anything the first couple of times he said that. And then, you know, I don't think Todd really understands that I've been doing this kind of work for a long time, but I sort of let him know. I said, hey, listen, man, in my world, you know, that intention to test yourself is really a, and he's a pretty buoyant character. He's a pretty happy go lucky guy, very bright guy.
Yeah.
But I said, that's going to set you up to feel something. Maybe you're not going to slam clubs. And I think it reminded me, and again, your article ties into this, and you know, one of the reasons that I don't melt down anymore is because I worked hard with a lot of help from people, yourself included, to change my intention of golf. Oh, we got to the first tee yesterday, and it's funny, I warmed up and hit some balls, and there was a Nick Kenny from the National is a teaching pro there. We had a nice chat. And the guy we were playing with, the Nike VP, you know, we were talking to somebody else in the green. He goes, oh, you're playing with him today. Ooh, whatever. And this guy was a humble Howard fan, so we were talking, and he said, whatever you do, don't bet with him, because he doesn't know if I'm a golfer or not. And I'm like, okay. He goes, last time he shot like 77. I'm like, oh, that's great. Good. So I knew the guy could play. So we get to the first tee, and I just quietly whispered to Todd. I said, don't tell these guys what my handicap is. Just don't, because what I find that does sometimes for me and other people is it sets this other expectation. So he had no idea if I could golf or not. But I shot one over on the front nine, so it was pretty clear I could. Yeah, I mean, I had played the golf course. I've played it one other time 15 years ago. But it was fairly clear that after I parred all the holes but one, I could play. And he's a nice guy. And this guy's been around a lot of good players. But it was kind of funny because, so my only bogey I made was I three putted from like 100 feet. So we get to the 10th, we get to the 10th hole. I par that hole. We get to the 11th hole, and I was in some rough, and I couldn't get the ball out very well. So I got into a cross bunker, got it out just onto the green. You know, I was like 45 yards away from the green. I thought, okay, I'm not going to try and go for the pin. So I got it on the green, and I had a long putt, and I three putted for double bogey. On the next tee, he said, I got to call my wife. By this time, we're buddies. I go, why is that, Dave? He goes, because I told her after 9, you were perfect. I'm like, okay, easy there, big fella. I said, well, you didn't think I was going to make make a bad shot all day? I said, I should have warned you. I'm going to make lots of them. So I do that because I don't want expectations for myself. Because as soon as somebody says, you know, he's a scratch golfer and one handicap, then I've got to go, fuck, well, nah, I better not shoot 80 then, or there's going to, you know, I mean, that's, ascended. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't want that expectation because I could have shot. Because what I shot yesterday would have absolutely no impact on me. But yeah, I'm still a human being. I don't want the weirdness of the group going, oh, I thought you were a good player. Meanwhile, I double bogeyed 3 holes in a row, which I won't give a shit about.
Yeah, well, this is really cool. This is really cool. So you and I both subscribe to the Sam Harris, we'll call it meditation app.
Waking up.
And every day, so I subscribe to the quote of the day or whatever it's called. And there was one that came through. Now, I'm not a big proponent of trying to be happy, and because there's all this emphasis in our culture on happiness. And I just think that one of the things that makes people miserable is trying to be happy all the time. But anyways, there was this one quote, I forgot who said it, is that happiness is reality without expectations.
Yeah.
And I just love that.
Love
and
it.
This is what you're talking about. So rather than, oh, this guy's a really good player, or he knows I'm supposed to do that, like, well, let's just let things unfold. And whatever happens, happens. And just be in the moment of that. Now, it doesn't mean you need to be a Zen monk about anything. But it's just, if we just, like, just deal with everything as it comes up and just enjoy what it is or suffer through what it is, then it's just so much easier than trying to live up to some standard or into a story or something. That, to me, that's really what reality is. It's just enjoying it.
Yeah.
Being in it.
And there was a time, a younger JSL.
Pre-enlightenment days.
Yeah. And I recall this vividly several times. The reason I said that to him quietly is because it has happened to me before where, in my younger days, where I would want the people I was about to play with to know they were about to play with a really good golfer. And mm-hmm. it would backfire on me because I'd spend the entire time trying to prove I was a really good golfer as opposed to, like, just playing golf. Because I wanted the experience for myself to be, as you said, to be reality. And reality is, on several occasions in a season of golf, I'm going to shoot a big score. And so having no added pressure to just be a guy that shoots a big score. And I'm also not the guy to go, you should see me yesterday. You know what I mean? Like,
I
have this golf joke. I like when people will say to me, man, I was really, if I play with somebody on Friday, they'll say, man, I was really driving it good on Monday. I go, Monday was a long time ago in golf. Monday's a long way away in golf.
But you know what? Neither of us are immune to getting caught up in our own bullshit. And so here's the first reference to the long-awaited book that's coming out. Seven Ways Not to Cook Steak and Make
Seven
It Tough.
Microwave quick, Seven Quick Dinners for Your Family by Tim O'Connor.
Yes.
Getting Unstuck, everybody. Everyone else, everyone knows the title by now by heart. It's Getting Unstuck, Tim O'Connor's long-awaited tome, soon to be published.
So in the book, I talk about how last year...
No, wait a minute. I'm going to start calling your book Project 2025.
Hold on.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Man. So
that's funny.
Tim O'Connor, Project 2025, coming in the spring of after the Masters of next year. Please continue, Tim. Sorry for trying to be funny.
No. Last year, I write about this in the book, that in the Club C last year, I'm playing in the Champ Flight second round. I'm playing pretty well. And I hit the ball onto the... So I get onto the par 4 18th in three shots. And I got about a 50-foot putt. I leave that 10 feet short. And then I hit the next one up, and I leave myself just about a, 15-inch thing to tap in. I rush it, and I miss. Mm. I four-putt. Anyways, the point I'm getting to is that I was livid. I was so angry. And the narrative I had as I raced across the parking lot in the cart with it absolutely floored in my head was, oh, my God, you're the fucking coach, you're the mental game guy, and you just four putted in front of 30 guys watching you in your Club C. Really, the coach just did that. You know, what are they gonna think? Well, once I settled down, and there's a whole story about it in the book, I went, well, they didn't fucking care.
Yeah.
No one cares.
By the time you got to your car, trust me, long before they'd forgotten about it. Yeah.
Absolutely. But you know, it happens to all of us. I don't care who you are. We get caught up in this story and, oh, my, I'm supposed to be this and all that. And it's just, we're humans. We're messy. But it happens to the best and worst of us.
Yeah, so let's. I'm moving on now because some things have happened since Wednesday, and I the last episode I told a story about a week ago. I played with again at a different golf course, and you know, double bogeyed the first hole, and then I played the rest of the round under par. And but rather than tell that story, because it was kind of funny about the guy who thought I was like a, it was a guy in our group who didn't know me, and again about handicaps. It's a very, and it's sort of a bit of a theme, because as you said, you spoke with, you know, Mason Cassis for 45 minutes before you found out he was even a decent golfer. And again, a younger version of me would want everyone in the group to know they were playing with a scratch golfer. And you know, this experience I had a week ago was, you know, again, I, after double bogeying the first hole, the one guy in our group who didn't know me, I guess he just wrote me off. Because somewhere deep in the back nine, there was a discussion. I didn't even know. I wasn't part of it. But the guys I was playing with were talking about handicaps. And all I heard was my name. And the guy, they were asking him, these were friends of mine, asking him, what do you think his handicap is? And he said 7. Well, at that point, I was even par for the round. After, you know, I started joking and went 7. I mean, I've just parred the last 13 holes in a row. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It was kind of funny. But what's happened the last couple of days, I wanted to throw by you, because you played a scramble yesterday and shot some crazy low score. And I have played 2 rounds of golf since we last spoke. And I, for the season of 2024, I've shot this number more times. Like, I've just got stuck on a number. In fact, I sent a buddy of mine a note. I said, well, for the 400th time this year, I've shot this score again. And then I put in brackets, you know, if you like that kind of exaggeration. But literally, I'm stuck on a number. And I wonder if, you know, I don't know what that, if it's a psychological thing or I just seem to have shot that number a lot. But it's ever happened to you in a season where you sort of get stuck on, or maybe this happens to other people where you, whatever your handicap level is, you just seem to always shoot a similar score.
Yeah, well, yeah, here's where my mind immediately goes. So I remember, this is back when I played at Spring Lakes back in, the 80s. And I started to become a better player, but I'd never shot in the 70s. And there's a bunch of times like I was just, I'd have like a, you know, I'd have like a par putt of like 5 feet for 79 and miss and shoot 80. And that just happened over and over again. It was like 80, 81. And I just think that because I was so invested in shooting 79 and having my breakthrough and all that nonsense. But, you know, once I finally did, you know, wrestle a putt in there for 79, then it wasn't such a big deal anymore. And I started to, you know, occasionally shoot more in the 70s. But I think that's kind of what it is. There's kind of this psychological, I'll say, tension going on that creeps into our game, and it's kind of becomes Groundhog Day over and over again about these things. And yeah, I think it happens, I think, all the time. How many times does it happen to, you know, say an amateur musician or say an actor trying to get a role, you know? And so we'll go with he auditions and he's doing really well, but he always finds that maybe in that 5-minute thing on stage, he's doing that at about the 4-minute mark, he starts to hyperventilate or something, mm-hmm. or get tight, yeah. and he doesn't get the gig. And I think it's super common for people to have that kind of thing, like in relationships. We've gone out for 3 months with this lovely young man or whatever, and then here's where it goes for shits. I just think that and a lot of it is the recurring story, the things that go on, and it's just it's
like
a rehashing.
Regressing to your average, regressing to the mean, or whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's what I was thinking about there. Yeah.
You know, I've been playing. I play at Glencairn, which is a course in Toronto, and we have our men's night on Wednesday nights. And I don't play all of them. I may have played, let's say for this, our sake of this discussion, 10 of them out of the 15 that there've been. And of those 10 rounds, 6 of them I've shot the same score.
What's the score?
74.
Okay.
And I've shot
nice
it.
Nice score.
Yeah, it's a good golf score. I mean, I've shot it every way you can shoot it. I've double bogeyed the last hole for 74. I've birdied three of the last four for 74. And we started as a shotgun, so I'm not starting on the first hole very often. So I often don't really know what I'm shooting. Wednesday, I was playing pretty well. You know, one of the nines I shot went under par. But we got back to the nine that we started on, and I bogeyed two of the last four holes and didn't know what I shot. And when the guy who was keeping score said, yeah, it was the 74 sound right? I go, yeah, it does. Yesterday, I played a golf course I've only ever played one other time before. And I didn't really know the course very well. I knew I made a double bogey on the back nine, but I'd made some late birdies. And I had a putt, like a 12-foot putt on the 18th hole. And somehow in my mind, I don't know where I got this from, but somehow in my mind, I thought it was for like even par or something, right? You know, like, I mean, it wasn't like it was a big deal, but I was thinking, I think, is this for 72? Anyway, I missed it. And whoever was keeping score said, does 74 sound right? I went, yeah, sure. 74 sounds fine. Like, I don't know. Sure. Let's go with that. Yeah. Anyhow, I wanted to shout out one of our Swing Thought listeners and the guy that introduced me to SecretLinks.golf, the company that I'm shouting out on this show. His name is Gavin. And I met him in Mexico. He's a golf nerd, man. He's been listening to Swing Thoughts, and he's a big, big, like, he's someone that never golfed until a couple years ago and just goes every day. And he's really, you want to talk about the epitome of committed versus interested in getting better at golf.
There you go.
It's something to see. Hits balls every morning with a teacher, and he's working on his game all the time. And he goes out and plays, and he sends me this 2-minute. I should play the voicemail. It was so amazing because he broke 100 for the first time the other day. Shot 99.
Nice.
And this guy's been a successful businessman. He's been, you know, he's a happy dude. But I'm going to tell you, the joy in this message was just something else. And it goes to show you that, you know, you can get so much in this game. There's so many rewards. But when that happened, this guy's, I don't know how old he is, probably early 50s. But, like, you would think he invented something. Like, or discovered something. But, yeah, so I wanted to say congratulations for 99 the first time. And he's the kind of guy that's going to, he's one of those people that a year from now, it's going to be 89 and 85. Yeah. Like, he's going to get there. But yeah, it was kind of cool.
Yeah, that's always so nice. What the game can deliver, and there's no getting around. I mean, we come back to talking about Amazing Mazin, and he plays to have fun. But yeah, he's conscious of score at a certain point. You and I are conscious of score. There's no getting around it. Part of this game is this. Challenge is such a cliched word, but the challenge of the score and trying to hit it well, and it's finding that balance of, yes, this is fun. It absolutely is fun, but golly, I hope I hit this in the fairway.
Yeah, well, because the game it's set. Listen, the idea that your coaster says play a well-adjusted person is somebody who can play the game as they play golf as though it was a game. The object of the game.
Yeah,
is to get the ball in the hole in the least amount of strokes. So we're always aware of it, but I've become better at being less obsessed with it. Even though I'm, I've shot a couple scores lower than that, and a bunch of scores higher than that. But I can remember certain milestones. I was very aware of where I stood.
Oh, yeah.
Breaking 80 for the first time. Very aware of it. Back to your story about breaking 80. Like, I'm surprised because usually those stories, when I hear them, and I've lived it a couple times, where you won't just, like, when Gavin shot 99, I said to him a long time ago, I said, you know, sometimes when you get a milestone breakthrough, it's not just 79 or 89 or whatever, or 99. You'll go crashing through it. You'll shoot 95. Because you'll be so in the zone. But I mean, I'm sure lots of our listeners have stories like yours, and I've had a few, where you get close to something and you're hyper aware of it.
Yep.
and tension creeps in and you can't put a nail up your ass anymore. Not even if you had a hammer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's why I always have this kind of rule. As when we get to the 10th tee, I would probably know my score, but don't tell me. Don't tell me, you know, hey, you got it going today. You're one over.
I know. There's always that guy who counts up everyone's score as we're sitting on the 10th tee. So we, know, so we all know we've shot. Be quiet.
I know. He's got he's the accountant. You know, he's got a little visor and the little pencil behind his ear and everything. And it's like, it's okay, buddy. But that's why I think sometimes shotguns are great.
Yes.
Because you're not really sure where you're at. And maybe you made a double and you made a birdie or two in there or something. And so sometimes you're not even really that sure where you are. And that's a great spot to be.
Yeah.
But I do want to chat briefly about yesterday's scramble.
Yes. Where you, when you first, I was kind of distracted before the show and you were talking a little bit about it. And I was like, excuse me, what? When you said the number, I was like, what? What are you talking about?
Yeah, we shot 56 yesterday, and we lost in retrogression.
Wait, on a par 72 hole course, you guys were that was 16 under in a scramble? That's amazing.
No, no, it was par. We were 14 under, so it's still pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, that's pretty good. I don't care. Yeah. And was it some besides you, which is you're a very fine player, were there other good players, or was just some guys that could putt that day?
No, it was, I played, it's the Mo Norman, tournament that the Waterloo Police have every year. And it's to raise, money for the tips program, you know, for that kind of thing. And, so I play every year. It's a good way to meet up with more people in the Mo Norman community and, just see some good old friends. And so Frank Corby is a PGA of Canada guy, and he teaches Mo's single plane swing, and he's out. Sorry, Frank, I forget the name of your course. He's out near Oshawa Way, and two of his coachees, Bill and Ron. Anyway, so Frank's a good player, really good player. He can really knock it out there, and I was playing pretty well. And so was Bill and Ron.
Nice.
But it was one of those scramble things where today we're making putts.
Yeah.
We've all been in scrambles where you just can't seem to get it anywhere near the hole. You know, you got like, you know, a 4-footer for birdie and all four of you.
Yeah, exactly.
Can't find the hole. But yesterday we were sinking them. And but I also had I had this one. But again, talk about fun. We had about a 50-foot putt. And the first two guys were just trying to figure out the line. And I hit a putt, and it's tracking. And it just goes, it does, it's almost a complete 360 and stays out. And they said it was the slowest lip out they ever saw. They were all just like, and that's the fun of it.
Absolutely.
So like, whoa, oh my God, I can't believe it. You know. So it was a riot, and
wait,
so
you also lost by retrogression in a scramble.
In a scramble.
So you tied another team that was 14 under. I say that suspiciously.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they, you know, it's one of the guys was an associate professional at Whistler Bear, so he's a player. Yeah. No, it was so fun, and I remember in the day when I was a golf writer, I hated scrambles. I wanted to play my own ball. I wanted to play, you know, you get on these really amazing courses, you know, these courses are looking to be, you know, rated highly, or it's a new course that they want an article written about. I said, can I play my own ball, please?
No, I know what you mean.
But scrambles can really be fun because you try shots that you normally wouldn't try, and it kind of gets back to golf being fun.
Well, there's a lot of freedom in it. When I first came to Toronto, I was hosting a lot of scrambles because I thought it was a great way to get my name out, and I had this, you know, I could play, I had this magic trick I could do, which was play golf. You know, to a lot of people, I would be in these charity scrambles with people and no idea. They knew I was Humble Howard from the Humble and Fred show, but they had no idea I could hit a golf ball, and it was like, oh, he can do this funny little thing. and it got me to meet a lot of people. But what I always found, and I did a lot, like I was hosting 10 or 12 of these a summer, and I found that, you know, I was a younger man. They want to see it. You know, everyone wants you to hit it far. So I was swinging as hard as I could for on every drive. And then when I go back and play my own ball a couple days later, I was fucked. I was like, what happened to that swing? I liked them for one reason, as you just said, trying shots, you can be more playful, but it almost shows you like what's possible.
Yes.
What could you do if you were playing, Fred Shoemaker reference, with freedom, unencumbered by all the things that we've been talking about today? How as you're going back to you trying to go for the green at 9 at Blue Springs, if that were a scramble, I guarantee you we'd all hit better shots.
Absolutely. Yeah, because it's about the fun and the oohing and aahing. And yeah. I remember there was an event recently that we weren't clear if it was a scramble or not. They hadn't communicated very well, you know, when the pros there and, you know, welcome to, you know, XYZ golf course. And we were all relieved to find out it was a scramble because it's so much more fun. It really is. And just the stuff that happens and how you're all just kind of teaming up. Where do you think this one goes? Let's go right or left. I think it's a little uphill at the end here. And what do you think? And you send one down. But actually, it was really interesting. At one point, we had about a 4-footer. 4-footer for par. And the first guy got up there, and he didn't really read it. And it was Frank said, "Hey, putt it like you want to make it."
Yeah.
I thought that was cool. And so I asked him what was that about? And he says, "Well, I think that he was just getting up to kind of hit it and see which way it broke."
Yeah, to show us, right.
Exactly. And as opposed to, okay, let's take care of business here. So it was kind of funny how it brought a little bit of seriousness to this, you know, frivolity of playing in a scramble.
Well, I was laughing about two things. One is, you know, it's going to be a long day in a scramble where on the second or third hole, your team makes a bogey. You're like, oh, well, we're not going to be getting a prize today.
We missed a 4-footer for birdie on the second hole. We thought, oh, it's going to be a long day.
But the thing that makes me laugh is because my favorite thing to do now is one of my other little golf jokey jokes I do sometimes is, the first tee of a qualifier or a big invitational or the club championship. I did this a couple of weeks ago where, you know, they're there and they're giving the rules. Okay, guys, and blah, blah, blah. Show everyone your balls, not your real balls, by the way. Identify your balls and blah, blah, blah. So-and-so you'll be hitting first. And I go, wait a second. To be clear, this isn't a scramble. And it just breaks the tension.
Yes.
I've done that at GAO events. So wait a second. So we're not all playing the same team? I had no idea. And they all fucking look at me like I'm an idiot. Well, there you go. I don't know. It's not the same as the last episode. But you know what? At least this one has recorded correctly. I'm looking down at the little production board here. Carl Morris. Thank you, Howard. Carl Morris's show is called The Mind Caddy. And if you want to hear me say a lot, I can't listen to myself. I mean, it's ridiculous. But I did just preview the audio and wanted to hear a couple things. And Carl's very, very good. And we talk a lot about the stuff we talk here. And I promised him I would share it. So if you have a chance to listen to it, you know, give it a shout, give it a listen. It's called The Mind Caddy, available wherever podcasts are disseminated. Tim O'Connor's book, Project 2025, will be out soon, we hope. And the Substack.
You made me die here.
The Substack at o'connorgolf.ca. This program is produced and is the property of Humble and Fred Radio. Any reproduction in whole or in part
is subject, hit by a bolt of lightning.
Is subject to an FBI investigation. One more show, one more week of the season in terms of us. And then once September comes, we'll be back to our non-golf season schedule. Do you have anything to add, sir?
Well, just interesting. You mentioned the ums. When I was in Toastmasters, that was like it wasn't just a venial sin. It was a mortal sin, you know, that you did an .
I'm sorry, a venereal sin? What is that? Sorry.
Oh, the Catholics will get it. Okay, it's inside joke for Catholics.
Oh, I got it. I just wanted to make a stupid pun.
There you go. Good. So when we first started doing this podcast, I'd listen and I'd go, oh, I say a lot. And, oh, how many times did I say you know in this one? And I was getting all self-conscious. And I'd even have like a little sticky thing say no ums today or something. And then I'd listen to CBC, you know, the paragon of radio journalism in Canada, and they're talking to somebody, another, you know, the anchor to a reporter, and they're umming and you knowing all over the place. I went, this is just conversation, so just relax, Tim.
Yeah, it's just okay. Relax, Tim, or you'll get a venereal sin. thanks to TaylorMade Golf, as always, TaylorMadeGolf.ca, WhoIsOscarBravo.com, and SecretLinks.golf. Thank you, Mr. O'Connor. Fingers crossed this one's recorded. The now episode 268A. And we'll see you next week.
You get a shiver in the dark. It's raining in the park. But meantime, sound of the river, you're stopping your whole everything.